Hello.
Hi, Jack. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm so excited.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course.
You know, I'm very busy.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, we're all so busy right now.
I couldn't decide if I would wash the dog dishes or do the podcast.
Priorities. Well, thank you for prioritizing the podcast over the dog dishes. Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. So really quick, I just want to say, like, this episode, you know, when David and I, who you know, started this podcast, my idea behind it was I wanted it to be more, you know how when nowadays, I think we hear about it a lot more, when you have people that may not fully understand what the LGBT plus lifestyle is, or have a million questions. And I think more and more I hear people responding with like, oh, well, read a book or look it up. I don't want to be like, you know, I shouldn't have to inform you, you should know. I'm not about that type of response. I think that when you want people to understand you, you should be willing to try and have a conversation with them. That's not to say that it's going to be successful every time, but at least try and be informative. And so this was kind of like that. When people say read a book, in my idea, this was kind of like the book that people would be reading. So I always wanted the idea of the podcast to be somewhere that people from all walks of life could come to and learn something, or maybe get a firsthand experience into a specific topic. So I was really excited when you agreed to do this, because I think that right now, with everything going on, I think that there are a lot of things that people are losing sight of. Not just when I say losing sight of, I mean that they're out of touch with, if you will. Right. And I know that this, you know, COVID-19 experience has been compared to the HIV epidemic a lot, HIV and AIDS epidemic. Now, I don't have a firsthand experience in that, so I don't know if that's true or not. But I also know that there is a younger generation of people living now that are a lot more open and a lot more accepted, that could also, on a completely different note, take this time to learn about how they got to be so lucky to be born, you know, in a time where it's a lot less frowned upon and more accepted to be LGBT plus. So with that said, I just want to start off by, if you don't mind, giving people your name and what it is that you do for work.
Okay. My name is Jack Lorenz, and I'm the Director of Development and Communications for the Alliance for Housing and Healing. And we provide housing and support services for chronically homeless people who have HIV and AIDS.
Okay. And how did you get involved with Alliance for Housing and Healing?
I was, our biggest fundraiser is an event called the Best in Drag Show. And about 30 years ago, I was living in an apartment building in West Hollywood with a bunch of friends. And one of our friends was a guy named Alexis Pittman, who had AIDS and was getting rental assistance from an organization called Aid for AIDS, which is what we were originally called.
And Alexis.
Aid for AIDS. The Best in Drag Show was originally a fundraiser for Aid for AIDS. We, about 10 years ago, merged with another agency to come, and we're now called the Alliance for Housing and Healing. But Aid for AIDS is our primary mission. It always has been. And my friend Alexis loved the Miss America pageant more than life itself. It was it was everything to him. And so we used to go down to his apartment every year and watch the Miss America pageant with him. And since he had what we called the AIDS, we had to be nice to him and put up with it.
The AIDS, you had to be nice to him. What year was this?
This would have been in 1987, 1988.
Okay. I was born in 1988.
So if nobody's told you today, let me be the first. Go fuck yourself.
No, I'm so excited. Okay, so
I mean that in the most loving of ways, of course.
Of course. Yes. So the Miss America pageant, he was obsessed with it. And what happened from there?
So we would go watch it every year. And one year he decided to have a parallel Miss America pageant in with drag queens. And so he invited some drag queens over to his apartment, and we all went down. And he had five drag queens, and they each did the interview, bathing suit, all the different parts of the of Miss America. And then as the night was going on, we started throwing dollar bills at the guys to kind of vote for them. And at the end of the night, there was like 40 crumpled dollar bills on the floor. And we said, well, Alexis, what are you going to do with the money? And he said, well, I'm going to iron it and take it to Aid for AIDS tomorrow. He was from New Orleans. And so that first night, the unintentional fundraiser was $40. And we now, 30 some odd years later, we fill the Orpheum Theater downtown with 2,000 people, and we usually raise about $500,000. And so that's how I came to know, that's how I started to know the place that I work. First as a volunteer, I volunteered for the show. My then husband was the director. I supported it financially and volunteer. And over the years, I kept in contact with the agency. And then about 10 years ago, I switched careers. I had been a studio executive all that time. About 10 years ago, I switched careers and started doing work in the social justice space. And for the past 5 years, I've been doing it at the Alliance.
That's amazing. I also have to say, as someone who's been to Best in Drag Show at the Orpheum Theater, it's one of the best things I've ever seen put on. The effort that you guys put in and the amount of work that goes into it, and all of it being for charity and a good cause, is like incredible. So hats off to you, because I know that that's, it's a lot of work, and it can sometimes be a little thankless. I think when it comes to charity, I mean, overall, of course, you know, it gets a lot of, it might get a lot of press and a lot of praise, but I don't think individually you get as much praise as everyone should. So thank you for doing that for our community. I think it's incredible.
It's very exciting. You know, I consider it an honor and a gift to be able to do the work that I do. I know a lot of people would love to be able to work, do kind of the work that I do, but for a lot of reasons, they're not able to. So right. I really feel like it's a privilege that I get to do the work that I do. And I'm very grateful to be able to do it.
100%. I mean, I am one of those people, you know, I try and you've seen me, like I volunteered here and there, and I've helped out with you guys here and there, but like, I always wish I could do more.
Right.
And that's just not, unfortunately, the life that I lead right now, but hopefully sometime down the line, that would be an option. I did want to ask, so you said this was 1987. Have you always been in L.A.?
Yeah, I've been in L.A. since I was 12 years old.
Oh, where are you from originally?
I'm from New York.
Oh, nice. Okay, so that's perfect, because I wanted to ask now, I don't know if you were, I'm not sure, I know that a lady never reveals her secret, but you're far from a lady. I mean her age, but you're far from a lady. So... I don't know. Were you, I'm assuming you were either just being born or fairly young when Stonewall happened. Cause you're what, in your 50s right now?
I mean, yeah, well, close enough.
Okay. Okay.
I don't have as much of a recollection of Stonewall as I do, the AIDS epidemic.
Okay. Now, do you remember anything at all of Stonewall happening?
Not in the moment. I certainly do now, but at the time, I don't have any recollection of it at all.
Right, totally. So, but on that note, then, what was it like living through the HIV and AIDS epidemic?
It was
terrifying.
It was more than terrifying. It was, it was so... it was painful. It was to see young men, one after another, after another. You know, I like to share this story that it is part of my story. When I was 26 years old, I had the durable power of attorney for 12 guys whose families had abandoned them, who were not willing to help them make any life decisions anymore. And I, although I love my work, I have a fair amount of young people that work with me and work for me. And some of those 26 years old, I would not trust with my Starbucks order.
100%. 100%.
I think that the whole AIDS epidemic made a whole generation of those of us that survived grow up much faster than we should have had to. You know, no 26 year old should have one durable power of attorney for a person who's transitioning out of life. Nonetheless, 12. That's absurd.
It's unheard of.
But here's what I find so fascinating or interesting or hopeful about what we're experiencing now. That period 35 years ago, we had no federal leadership. We were all dying and nobody really seemed to know how to help us. Mm-hmm. And I believe that as a result of that situation, the LGBT plus community has become an incredibly powerful voice in the world. Because we took care of ourselves and we stood up and we said, we will take care of ourselves and you will help us.
Right.
And so although the cost was breathtaking and I almost would be willing to give up everything we've gotten to have some of those guys alive today, I believe that this moment in time will help us to transform in a very similar way, because I'm watching gentle acts of kindness amongst ourselves that we probably haven't seen in a very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, just kind of going back, I'm trying to bullet point what you've said so far and going back to, you know, how quickly you were forced to grow up, you know, being 26 years old. And actually, you know, you said having power of attorney. For those people that are listening, that younger crowd, what did that mean, having power of attorney over your friends back then that had HIV?
That meant that I was the one who would decide when it was time for them to die.
Right.
I had that. That was my decision because we had discussed it. We would have discussed it in advance, and there were very specific. Each guy had his own line in the sand, so to speak. And then once they crossed that line, they didn't want to be here anymore. And so it was my job to honor their wishes when it was time to go to remove life support.
And then how, you know, and I apologize because I feel like some of these questions might seem a little like not cutthroat, but just intense to ask. But what was the life expectancy back then once you had AIDS or HIV?
In the very beginning, it was just a few months. It's very similar. I find it's to be very similar to COVID right now, in that once you're diagnosed, there were guys that once they were diagnosed, by the time they were diagnosed, it was way too late and they were gone in a matter of weeks. And the longer that it went on and the more different treatments came along, the life expectancy increased. But it could be a matter of weeks. By the time there were enough medications that people weren't dying of it, it would probably take a little less than a year.
Wow. It was
overwhelmed
by all this. It's like information that I already know, but then hearing it again is just like, because, you know, I think that the one thing is I will give myself credit in the sense that I've always been very grateful and have always looked back at the people that came before me and that, you know, worked their asses off and were out there marching, were out there like fighting for the cause and being able to give me the life that I have now. But, you know, but then in that moment, I'm like so proud and sometimes it like brings me to tears. But then of course, like, you know, we're in 2020, so an Instagram or something will distract me. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I have to worry about this, or I'm thinking about this. So just like sitting down and having conversations like this, it just like hits me all over again. And I just kind of like, I'm like, whoa, it's so crazy to think that we, you know, have come this far. And now we're almost kind of like history is repeating itself in a complete monster.
Yeah. It's the comparisons are remarkable. The thing that is harder, I think the thing that's harder here than for sure than AIDS is this social isolation, because we were able to be with one another and hold one another and take care of one another And we're not able to do that. I had a, the first person that I know that died of COVID is a guy named Gary Bowie, who was the executive director of Being Alive, which is an AIDS service organization. His office is just below ours in our West Hollywood office. And he's a really great, he was a really great guy. And, you know, he has a husband who can't bury him. He can't talk, he can't hold people and be comforted. I think that that's a real, that's very hard for people.
What do you mean he can't bury him?
He can't have a funeral service because you can't have any public gatherings.
Oh, right. I didn't even think of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That's brutal.
Yeah. So you can't even, yeah, you can't even have a funeral. They're just cremating bodies and sending you ashes.
Wow. And that's also just like really fucked up for the people who don't want, who didn't want their body to be cremated.
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't, you know, maybe they're, maybe they're burying people, but I don't think, I mean, I don't think so, but I don't know. I just know that, I know that for Gary's husband, he, there's no, there can't be a service and he, we'll just send him his ashes.
I'm so sorry to hear about Gary. I feel like, and then, of course, the even more heartbreaking, it's somebody who, you know, basically gave their life to amazing
causes. Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, I think the one thing that I keep seeing, you know, people saying, oh, it reminds me of the AIDS epidemic and blah, blah, blah. And again, I didn't live through it, so I can't. I only know what I, you know, what I've read and, you know, the documentaries that I've seen. And I'm like, okay, I can kind of see that, but I also didn't live through it, so I can't give a full comparison. But it's interesting to see, one, how the world is responding quicker, obviously because it's not, because COVID-19 is not discriminating. It's anybody.
Right.
So that definitely changes things up. But also the fact that, you know, I think back then it was more, it wasn't just a discrimination. It was something that I think across the globe, for the most part, people looked down upon. I know that like in Europe, it was like, what was it? In the 60s, 67, I think it was, they had decriminalized being gay, and then it took Stonewall and that whole movement for it to be here. But even then, you know, gay people were shunned and looked down upon and weren't fully accepted. So it's,
well, we have an administration right now that shuns us.
And, right.
And if, and I can assure you, if it was only LGBT people that were getting this virus in the United States, there wouldn't be the kind of activity that there is now. But I think that people are not paying attention. I think that they're not looking at the real numbers because this disease is discriminating. Minority communities, African-American communities are dying at a much higher rate than white communities because of the economic disparities that we present in this country.
Yeah, I mean, but I, sure. I guess maybe my argument was more so the fact that because of
the... No, I know what you mean. I absolutely know.
Yeah. Because of the way that it was transmitted.
Yeah, of course.
Very different, where I feel like now
that would be,
it's more so putting a light on how us as a country have discriminated against certain people, because those people are the ones that are getting it. And now it's forcing us to shine a light on the reason why, and it's forcing us to shine a light on what their living situation is. I mean, you have, God, I wish I was better. I was less geographically challenged on New York. I believe it's Queens or Brooklyn right now that has really, really high, high, COVID-19. What's the word I'm looking for? Cases, because you have all of these people who are immigrants that live like 17 people to an apartment. And you have children and mothers, and there's nothing you can do because that's where you live and everyone around you is sick. So you're going to get it too. You know, it's shining a light on how it is that, you know, how is it that that people are so bad off that they have to be living like that? And what is it that we're doing to fail those people? Because it really, it shouldn't be happening. And I mean, now that's bringing me to the whole idea of like these celebrities with their like stay at home thing, and they have, you know, whatever. So with that said, what, you know, speaking of what the AIDS epidemic was like and how it compares to now, what advice do you have for the younger gay generation that didn't live through that? And maybe like, so a lot of things I'm seeing are people complaining, for example, about like, oh my God, Pride is canceled. I can't believe it. Like, this is such bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And my mentality this entire time has been, you know what? This is less than ideal, but I'm so lucky and I'm so grateful to be safe at home, to be safe and healthy at home. I'm not sick. I don't feel sick. Like, I'm making sure to take care of myself. If I have to step outside, I'm wearing my mask. Like, my last thought is fucking Pride. You know what I mean? Right now I'm thinking, yeah, I'm worried about my mom, my family, my friends. So what advice would you have for that younger gay generation, having already lived through an epidemic? What advice would you have for them as far as when they're stressing about the minute things like Pride and all their circuit parties that they're missing?
I don't know necessarily that I have. Well, I think that what I would like to ask them to do is to just please take responsibility for your part in this. Because the sooner you accept responsibility, the sooner there will be a solution. And by that, I mean, I saw a graphic today that if we get to 90% social distancing, this will be over in 4 weeks, and we're at 50% right now.
Right.
And so there's a term called young invincibles. And when the Affordable Care Act first came online, I was responsible for enrolling marginalized members of the LGBT community at the job that I had at the time. And we have and I was one of them, and everybody has been one of them, a young invincible. You think you don't need it. You don't need health insurance. You don't need any of this. We saw it from those kids down in Florida and Miami Beach at spring break.
Don't get me started on Florida.
Right. So, but here's the thing. You and I both know people that are out there in groups, and they're taking selfies of themselves and they're posting them.
Totally.
And so you need to take responsibility. Please take responsibility. If you're going to endanger you and your friends' lives, we don't want you to do that. But please don't post pictures of it and encourage others, because you don't know who considers you a role model and who looks up to you. And I think the same thing, that was kind of the lesson that we learned in the AIDS epidemic, was please be responsible. Please don't do things that other people will think are acceptable and risk and give them permission to risk their lives.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've heard a few times now how, speaking of, you know, doing things that are irresponsible, that at the beginning of the AIDS epidemic, people were saying that that the way to not catch it is by having more sex. Is that true?
I don't know that I heard that, but I did know a lot of people that said, well, I'm going to get it. If I don't have it now, I'm going to get it anyway. So what difference does it make?
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And they did, and they got it, and they died.
Oh man. What, you know, how long was it for you, or I guess for everyone, from beginning to end, from where it was like, oh my God, this is happening. Even going back further to like maybe hearing whispers about this thing, this, you know, flu or cold or whatever it was considered initially, to, okay, now it's killing people and now it's affecting the gay community and nobody's doing anything about it.
I think that I'm sober. I'm in NAA. I've been sober for a long, long time. Exactly. And so I've been in the rooms, because obviously when you do drugs and alcohol, you engage in behavior that's going to be inappropriate. So there was a greater percentage of people in the rooms who got sick very early on. Mm. So I was hyper aware of it. I don't know that I, in terms of like the general LGBT population, I don't know that I have an overall perspective, because it was so intense in the rooms of AA. So many people got sick so fast and died so fast because so many of us had engaged in behavior that was so high risk when we were loaded. Mm-hmm. So it came on very quickly, and it stayed for what felt like a lifetime. And it would probably, I think it was probably for a good decade that we were burying people on a fairly regular basis. You know, we would go to some weekends, we would go into to two and three memorials at a time. But I would venture to say, if I can look back, I would venture to say from the beginning to the time that it slowed down enough that some people had a chance, it was about 10 years.
Wow. That's a really fucking long time.
It's a decade.
Yeah, an entire decade of not really seeing a light, huh? Or thinking there would be an answer or something. Were there people already by the time that decade ended that had been living with it for a while that you knew?
Yeah. I don't think it's dissimilar to COVID in that there are people that I know, people who found out they had HIV at the very beginning and they're still alive today. And then there are people who I know that have gotten HIV 5 years ago and are dead.
Wow. Yeah, it's all about taking care of yourself and making sure that you're, you know, mm-hmm. Going to the doctor and taking your medication and getting checked regularly. Wow.
There really is no reason that anybody, at least in the United States, there's no reason that anybody in the United States today should die of AIDS. We have all of the medication, technology, health networks to prevent that from happening.
Right.
The only reason that somebody dies from AIDS these days is if they have not been diagnosed and are not taking their meds.
Yeah, totally. You know, I don't want to use the word irresponsible because I don't know everyone. You know, everyone I think has different circumstances and different issues going on. So I don't want to say irresponsible, but just trying to do the best you can to take care of yourself in the situation. So, you know, I'm sorry, I'm at a bit of a stump here just because I'm still overwhelmed with all this information and knowledge. Do you mind going a little more on like your experience during the epidemic? You know, if you don't mind answering how many friends you lost during that time, just kind of like giving an overview to the younger listeners that are maybe hearing about this for the first time because they never thought, you know, I think a lot of people are, oh, that's in the past, I don't have to worry about it. And it's like, well, no, you need to know that because that's gonna one, give you hope for today when there are a lot of reasons for us to lose hope. And also the thing about being part of the LGBT community for me, it's like, you know, my family's from Puerto Rico. I know a lot about my Puerto Rican heritage, and I'm so proud, and I have, you know, so much information, and when I hear anything related to Puerto Rico, or even, you know, when J-Lo had the Puerto Rican flag in the halftime show, like, I was in a
room awesome full of white that? People. Yeah.
I was in a room full of white people, and she pulled out that flag, and I jumped out of my seats. I was so happy. And they all looked at me like, girl, calm down. I'm like, you don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, you don't understand how huge that is. So, yep, you know, I also feel like, knowing my history with the LGBT community, like that's also part of my heritage, and I should know that, right. And I should be proud. And, you know, watching documentaries like Paris is Burning and everything else that, you know, luckily right now we have like Netflix and Hulu have to offer. You know, which, by the way, if you're listening and you haven't, you should definitely look up LGBT plus documentaries on both of those, on any streaming services that you have, because it's worth it and you get a lot of information there. But yeah, if you could just go into like your experience more as a gay man in the 80s, that would be incredible.
So I think that I don't really know how many friends that I lost. I would say, I think that this is the greatest sadness that comes from a lot of the guys of my generation, is that we never got to have great friends because we were so young and people died so quickly that we built a wall around ourselves to protect ourselves from being hurt because mm-hmm. the pain was so enormous. And after somebody died, you didn't have an opportunity to mourn. You were on to the next person that needed your help. So those of us that were healthy didn't really get a chance to be friends to people. We were more about taking care of people. And that's, I think that that's the biggest heartbreak that I have to this day, is that I built a wall that makes it very hard for me to have friends. And I know I'm not alone in that. I know that the few friends that I do have, and they're all of my age, that went through this, all have the same experience, that most of us only have maybe two, maybe three people that we could rely upon at any given time, because either the people that we could have had as friends are gone, or after it was over, we had lost the ability to open ourselves up to new friendships. I think that that's one of the greatest sadnesses of the epidemic for those of us that survived.
Yeah. Oof, sorry, that's like making me very emotional. please keep going. Sorry, I'm like crying.
So that is the challenge for all of us today that have survived it, is to figure out a way to, because it hardened our hearts, because we didn't have the option to be sentimental or soft at the time. We were just photocopying funeral services and handing them out faster than we could print them. But the other side of that is that I learned how to be authentically of service to people, expecting nothing in return. And for that gift, I have been given an incredibly peace-filled life, not necessarily an incredibly connected life, but it's been a very peace-filled life, because I think that the service life is the life that we were intended to have here. Mm-hmm. And although forced upon me and forced upon everybody that I knew, the result was that I know how to help people and I know how to be comfortable doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I'm back.
Girl down.
I just had a moment there. I'm like, oh, like I can't, you know, it's just like watching this and listening, you know, watching these documentaries and listening to stories like that, and just thinking of like having to feeling so, and for lack of a better way of putting it, I apologize, I don't mean to offend, but feeling so helpless. And you have no choice but to build this wall and kind of like freeze everything off essentially from your emotions. It's just like, that's fucking terrifying. It's
okay. Yeah. I'm a big Instagrammer, I follow social media a lot, and more, to be honest with you, because of my work. Because I need to know what the kids are thinking. But I see all these people with all their friends, and it makes me so, I'm so happy for them. I wish that on the one hand, I hope they learn the history of AIDS and understand that all of the social and political power that we have today is as a result of it. But I wish that I hope that they never, ever, ever have to go through what we had to go through to get it. I want them to be free and happy and have fun and have those friends forever. And I don't want them to know that the price that we paid was, I don't want them to have to experience the price that we paid. I want them to experience the fruits of our labors.
Yeah. And I think that that's where like my emotional pull is coming from, because, you know, my experience with the LGBT plus community has always been so amazing. I've been very, very lucky. Sure, has had people, you know, called me a faggot or tried to come for me because of the fact that I'm gay. Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, many people still to this day have experienced that. I don't think by any means it's as magnified as it was, you know, before my generation. But, you know, I still, even with those little bits here and there, I still, you know, my experience has been amazing. And, you know, going to Pride festivals, like, sure, of course, there's like, you know, the like, sexual drug filled side of it that's kind of like whatever, like come and go, but there's also just that like feeling of love and acceptance and community and an actual pride. And so you know, for me, like I think to that, and to take it completely to the flip side and put myself in what you're saying, just it sounds so dark, and that's a hard pill to swallow. But going back to what you said about, you know, staying in touch with what the young kids are thinking, because I feel the same way. I mean, I joined TikTok, and there's a part of me that feels like I sold out. Like, I'm like, no, you are too old for this shit. What are you doing shaking your ass on fucking TikTok? And there's another part of me that's just kind of like, oh, I have nothing else to do. I'm bored. Instead of starting an OnlyFans, I'm just going to start a TikTok because that just makes more sense.
Well, fortunately, you have a good ass for TikTok, so that works out well.
Better for TikTok than OnlyFans.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's a good product.
I'll take it. So, you know, seeing that, you know, you're saying you've very much done your part. And I think that, you know, working for a community or working for a company like the Alliance for Housing and Healing, you really do kind of have to have your pulse. I mean, your finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
I can't even speak anymore. I feel like this is the first time I've spoken to another human being in like,
oh, no.
So I'm like, what are words? How do they work?
I opened the door today and it was sunny and it was like a horror movie. I was like,
I know. My apartment is warm for the first time in a while. And I'm like, what is happening? Am I dying? No, but yeah. You know, having to have, you know, when it comes to putting on shows like Best in Drag and you know, doing a lot of fundraising, you really do have to have your finger on the pulse because you need to know what it is that's driving people, even, you know, more so the younger generation too, what's driving them to not only donate but also reshare and join, right? Because you don't want it to fade away. You want new blood that's going to be there for years and years to come. So I'm a very big believer, you know, that saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I call bullshit, you know, but so I'm a big believer in like ever changing growth. So what advice would you now have for an older gay generation about today and their younger predecessors? Because I've definitely met a lot of older gay men that while I respect them and totally understand, you know, to an extent where they're coming from, they're kind of set in their ways and they're kind of like, you weren't there for this. And they're almost like angry at the fact that everything they fought for, it maybe didn't fully work, but it's worked enough to where this younger generation doesn't have to worry about that. And that seems unfortunate. I can understand the idea of feeling like someone is getting an advantage from the fruit of your labors, but isn't that the point?
I don't know anybody that really is like that. I'm sure that there are people. Fortunately, I think that I'm very, very lucky. I've been blessed to be very active, and I do my best to stay current. And so my experience with younger gay men has been about that there is a hunger for this information and that there is gratitude. And like I said, I don't want them to have to know what I had to go through. I don't want anybody to experience what I experienced for what they have. You know, it's a gift. And so just take the gift and know that every gift takes work. And I don't begrudge them any joy at all. I don't begrudge them any, well, certainly because daddies are a thing. And so I'm really benefiting from that.
I was just going to say that. Wait a minute, is this cute because the fact that daddies are a thing right now and you've been living your best life? I see that
part. I am living my best life.
Don't forget, we were right above you. We were staying at the hotel room right above you at Pride. We're not done.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I think that totally daddies are a thing right now. I mean, guilty. I've been there. I've had my thoughts. I've had my fun. Not going to deny that. But I think that when it comes to an act, I don't know if I'm using this word properly again, forgetting how to speak English. To my defense, Spanish was my first language, but activism being, it doesn't seem, well, maybe not. Maybe in the last few years, it's been a lot more, like you see a younger crowd that are fighting for their rights, which is amazing. And it's so inspiring to see, like even seeing, you know, as someone in their 30s, seeing high school kids going out there. I'm like, fuck, like that's incredible. I wish I had done that. And, you know, when I was their age, or I wish that I had a way to do that when, that, when I was their age. So I feel like maybe in the last few years, it's, you know, I'm kind of backpedaling a little bit because in the last few years, you've seen it a lot more. But I feel like before that, and even more so, I would say my generation, there's a bit of, in my opinion, and in my experience, a bit of a hesitance to do as much. I feel like, and please correct me if you feel like this is wrong, but I feel like it was very much like your generation and then the generation after us, which is whatever, what generation Y, whatever. Yeah. You know, millennials, I feel, became very complacent for a while, and really didn't do much and didn't care to know much because it was kind of like, ignorance. Maybe it was ignorance is bliss. Would you say that that sounds about right?
You know, I think every generation has its own burden. And I think millennials suffered from the expectations of boomers, which were never going to be realized because things had changed so dramatically in our socioeconomic system that, you know, 25-year-olds used to be able to buy a house. Well, that's, and so I think the millennials suffered from an incredible sense of disappointment, both personal and parental, that they were not leading their best lives. You know, their parents had programmed them for it, and their parents had been programmed from it from their parents. So I think that millennials have had a real struggle because the world has changed so much from the boomers, or fucked up so much by the boomers, that they've had a struggle putting their print on the world. You know, I think that it's about, it's about a paralysis as opposed to an inaction. I think that it's so, I mean, people didn't have student debt until they were in their 50s when their parents were around. There's a very, I feel bad for millennials. I feel bad for all of us. But I think millennials got a really bad shot. They got a really bad hit.
Yeah, I, you know, it's funny. It's like you're taking all the feelings I've had for a really long time and put words to them in ways that I didn't realize could be put into words. That was basically what you just said was an Adele song to me. Adele will take all these emotions that you don't realize have ways of being described and expressed and does it. And you did that because it's very true. I, as a millennial myself, I definitely resonate with what you said. I think that we had all these expectations and ideas that just weren't able to be met based on what the baby boomers did. Oh, yeah. And we're still struggling with that. And like, we're now working towards making sure the next generation doesn't go through that. So they're going to, you know, they're going to be, maybe I'm going to, am I going to become that bitter person that like, wait a minute, I worked my ass off and now you don't have to struggle? No, I really hope that's the case. Well, yeah, I mean, that's all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else that you would like to add to the conversation while you have the mic?
I know. What, the only thing that I you were talking a little bit about being younger and being able to participate. And one of my favorite recollections, or one of my favorite things every year, to be honest with you, and you were there, is the Palm Springs Pride Parade. And one of the reasons that I love it.
Best Pride I've ever been to. Sorry to interrupt you, but it was fucking incredible, Jack. That experience
was fantastic. And here's one of the reasons that I love it so much. I don't know if you were able to see because we were participants, but every high school in the Coachella Valley is in that parade. Yeah.
I did not see that.
Can you imagine what life would be like, especially for me and maybe for you, if when we were growing up, our high school participated in its local gay pride parade?
Oh, I wish my high school did that.
How different our lives would be today.
Yeah. Incredibly different. Yeah. Oh my God.
So that's how I know it's working and things are changing. When I see a small town like Palm Springs, and every high school in the Coachella Valley has a presence in that parade. And it's not just the gay kids. It's the high school itself. That's so
totally.
Those are the kinds of things that just fill my heart with unbelievable joy. And I know that everything that we did is worth it when I see that.
Absolutely. And, you know, that makes a lot more sense to me because I'm just like, you know, an old soul. I mean, I'm, you know, I feel like I'm old and you're going to judge me for saying that because I'm only 32. But, you know, I feel like people are growing up really fast, you know, nowadays. And so, I definitely feel myself starting to become who my older self is going to be. But I will say that for me, like I said earlier, you know, my experience being only positive with LGBT pride and all of that stuff. Like my favorite pride prior to Palm Springs was Atlanta Pride because that, you know, and I've been very lucky to enjoy many prides in many different cities. But I, you know, Atlanta Pride just very much felt like a community coming together. It was not just about, you know, men in Speedos or in harnesses. Again, putting my hand
up. I believe that was my harness.
But, you know, it was not. Rick had your harness. I had my own. Thank you very much.
Well, who had my harness?
But, you know.
Who had my harness?
Huh?
Oh, Rick.
Rick did.
Oh.
Yeah. Rick wore your harness. I had my own. But you know, like it's not just about that. It's about like seeing these
seeing
families coming, you know, people with their even like straight people, you know, coming with their children and just showing them like what, you know, this sect of the world that that they probably weren't shown themselves when they were younger. And, you know, and until Palm Springs Pride last year, Atlanta Pride was my favorite because that's where I saw it the most. And I will say that is definitely something that stood out to me. While I didn't see that, that all the high schools were there, which just, it's like the cherry on top that makes it even the most incredible experience was that there were so many families there and people all ages. And it was just like, people were just so happy to see us. I mean, we got off of the flow and like after I put my shirt on and looked like a day-to-day person, if you will, people were still coming up to us and being like, hey, you were on that flow. Like it was so awesome to see you there, blah, blah, blah. And it just felt so great to have been able to participate in something like that.
I look forward to it every year.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, I look forward to continuing to do it every year. So don't forget about that. and then, well, last question. Do you have any specific like documentaries or TV shows or anything like that that you would say kind of encompass something special for you in the LGBT community that you would recommend to people during this time of like staying at home?
In advance, because I would have done some research because there are a bunch, but none of them are coming to mind right now. How to survive an epidemic or how to survive a plague? It's one of those. Like, is probably the best one in terms of HIV/AIDS for sure. How to survive an epidemic or how to survive a plague? That's a really good one. Boys in the Band is good kind of window into our world. I don't know if you're familiar with Boys in the Band. Oh, yeah.
He was written by a friend
of mine who just passed away 2 weeks ago. It was a Broadway play first. I mean, it's still being performed. I think it might still be on Broadway, actually, nothing right now. But it became a movie. It's a really interesting peek into who we were in an era gone by.
Well, first of all, I want to say sorry for hearing about your friend passing away. That's, you know, especially now, I don't know what their circumstance was, but like you said, knowing that like,
he was 84,
impossible
time to go.
Okay. Yeah, totally. He lived a full life. That's a healthy way to look at it. Listen, I've always been one of those people that I'm like, if I die after 65, I'm totally cool with that. Like, I totally personally, listen, if you want to live to be 100, by all means, live to be 100. But if I die after 65, that's a long fucking time. I'm 32 and I feel like I have lived many lives. There's been a lot, you know, I've had many experiences, many good, many bad. I've lived a full life. If my time comes, my time comes. So 84, totally. I get that. But it does suck that you don't get to go to a funeral or anything like that. That's must be a little hard. So I'm sorry. But I'll definitely be checking out Boys in the Band. And if anything else, please, again, I should have probably given you that question. A little bit of heads up on that question, but if you think of any, please send them my way and I will plug them in. I'm going to be editing this episode today and tomorrow. So I'll try and post it on Monday. So if you think of anything, please send them my way and I'll plug them in at the end of the episode.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dak. You're amazing. I appreciate you. And I can't wait to see you when all of this is done.
I really want to start to hug people again. I miss that a lot. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, so do I.
I live by myself. And I would say I've been living by myself for 2 years. Zero fucking complaints. Love living alone. Love coming home by myself, going to bed alone, having the entire bed. You know what I mean? Like, I'm one of those people 100%. I have never missed human interactions. Like, my new thing right now is just feeling I wish I had someone to cuddle with. And I'm like, oh, just I didn't realize how much, especially as a Latino who hugs people all the time. Like, I will hug people and, I'm not, I don't mean to discriminate when I say this, but white people look at me like I'm insane when I go in for a hug. And I'm like, sorry, I'm Hispanic. Like, I hug. But, hugging people, like that human touch, like I didn't realize how much I needed it and craved it. It's really intense. But yeah, definitely. I look forward to giving you a massive Same hug here. When I see you after all this ends. Please stay safe and stay in touch, and we will talk soon.
What?
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, sorry. One last thing. If you feel okay with it, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on them as Jack Lorenz.
Lorenz on everything. Perfect. Find him at Jack Lorenz on everything. If you're into daddies, he's a great daddy. Everyone stay safe, please.
Take this invitation to me.
Oh yes, totally. I'll tell them. Listen, I have no qualms and no shame in my game. So I was on Grindr, and I just want to put it out there. I was on Grindr, and I'm not meeting anybody. So relax before the judgment comes through. It's literally just like I'm bored. Here. What am I doing? So I'm just. And I can't tell you, I think I've blocked more people than I've talked to. But I saw Jack and I was like, oh my God, Jack. So then I messaged him on Grindr, the most random fucking Grindr message I think he probably ever received. And it was like, hey, do you want to do an episode of my podcast? It would be about A, B, C, and D. And you're like, and I feel like there was like, I mean, there was no actual visual pause, but I felt in your text like there was a pause and you're like, just text me. Like, why are we having this conversation on Grindr right now? But, in my defense, I will say that when I lived in Atlanta, Grindr had just really popped up into the scene and it wasn't very sexual. So my initial experience with Grindr was very social. So my friends and I were all starred, were everyone's favorite on Grindr. And we would message each other because they didn't have like the group thing. I think Grindr now has a group thing, but we would all message each other and just be like, hey, what are you doing today? Like, let's meet here. We're going to go to Blake's, we're going to go to Swingin' Richards or whatever bar we were going to that night. So that was my initial experience with Grindr. It was more of a social thing than it was a hookup thing, which is, that lasted, 2 weeks before it was just like some torsos everywhere. But that was my initial thing. So I totally get why people find it weird when I'll randomly message like my friends and I'll be like, hey girl, what are you doing? And they're like, nah, text me, I'm blocking you. Like, I don't need you in my grid. I don't need you to see when I'm on and when I'm looking. Yeah. Like, we're not doing this. But for me, it was just a very good thing. But anyway, so that's how I asked you to be on the podcast.
All right.
Okay, well, I will let you go now. Thank you so much again for your time. You're incredible. I think this is the fifth time I've said bye to you, but I'll talk to you for hours. I'm realizing now. But I will talk to you soon, I can't wait to see you.
Meh. Meh is a Pardon Network podcast.